Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. If you have just joined us, you are listening to Radio Islam International. Welcome to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zainat. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Well, following the recent news of 4 cases of typhoid in Johannesburg, many people are wondering how to safeguard themselves. While there is no current concern for spreading, ER24 urges people to familiarize themselves with how a person develops the illness and, of course, how it affects a person. Now, yes, certainly when illnesses like this comes out, we as, the people around always are concerned, and especially in the Johannesburg area, because that is where we are, in the Gauteng, Johannesburg area. So it is something to be concerned about, but we will be speaking, this afternoon, inshallah, in fact, in a little while, we'll be speaking to Dr. Ruben Holgate, who is the Chief Medical Officer for ER24 Emergency Services. She will definitely be, giving us more information about this illness and telling us what it's all about, okay? So we'll be joined in a minute or two with her. That will be followed by The Growing Child, our monthly program that we have. And today we're focusing on behavior development. And what we're actually looking at is how to banish horrid habits. If we're looking at habits like biting, hitting, pinching, whining, defiance, tantrums, and breath holding, these are things that we're going to be talking about in a little while. I'm sure it does sound familiar to many parents out there, but we'll be talking more about it in a little while. First up, of course, during this program, we'll be joined by our experienced and expert nursing sister Fatima Dawood, inshallah. Okay, so I hope we have Dr. Ruben online. Just checking with our engineers. Okay, we're just going to take a short break. We're going to try and get Dr. Ruben Holgate online, and she is the Chief Medical Officer for ER24. We're going to be talking about the typhoid, what we actually need to know about this disease. So stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to the program Family Health Matters. I'm your host, Sister Zainat. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, following the recent news of 4 cases of typhoid in the Johannesburg area, many people are wondering how to safeguard themselves. Now, while there is no current concern for the spread, ER24 urges people to familiarize themselves with how a person develops the illness and how it affects the person. And joining me online this afternoon is Dr. Ruben Holgate, who is the Chief Medical Officer for ER24, that's the emergency services. Hi, good afternoon, Dr. Holgate. Thank you so much for joining me this afternoon.
My pleasure.
Okay, now I understand that you have 4 cases of typhoid in the Johannesburg area, but which areas in Johannesburg are affected by this typhoid fever?
Sister Zina, just to confirm, there's 5 cases in Gauteng and actually 2 in the Western Cape.
Oh, okay.
Okay, so just to highlight that the areas affected are Hillbrow, Yeovil, and the areas around that. So there's no immediate concern for areas outside of those.
Okay. So, for the benefit of our listeners, and ER obviously wants us to familiarize ourselves and the public out there, just to be aware, and of course there's nothing to really worry about right now. But what exactly is typhoid fever?
So, it's a bacterial infection which is caused by a bacteria called Salmonella enterica serotype typhi, which is basically abbreviated to typhoid. Mm-hmm. So it's an enteric fever. In other words, it's gastroenteritis almost. It's very contagious. It's spread by either direct contact with feces or urine, or with somebody infected, or indirectly by eating the food or drink. So those are the key things around it. The most important, obviously, being that it is a bacterial infection, and that there are some other serotypes associated with it, but for the main purposes, Salmonella typhi is what we cause us, what the causative organism, yeah.
Okay, you know, just now for us, for the benefit, how is this really spread, and can we actually contain it right now? That it's just in the Johannesburg area, like you said, those few affected areas, and of course one or two in the Eastern Cape, if I've got it right. So how do you contain it? Is it possible to just contain it to a certain area and to make sure that, you know, it doesn't go out of hand?
Okay, so just to say, in terms of the spread, to answer your first point, it's via ingestion of contaminated food or water, and then obviously the fecal oral route, so in other words, a shed in the feces of an infected person. So the most important thing in terms of containment is strict adherence to hand hygiene. And obviously if you are in an area where there is concern around typhoid fever, aside from the hand washing, you may want to practice safe food and hand hygiene practices. So in other words, washing your food properly before you eat it, especially if it's fruit and vegetables, rather drinking uncontaminated water, for example, bottled, boiled or cooled water, or even chlorinated. And then if you do want to buy food from a sort of a stall or something along the side of the road, a vendor, rather make sure that the food's well cooked and served hot. And then fruit where you can, eat, you know, wash the fruit yourself and consider peeling it. And then the final comment I just want to make, because people often forget about it, is that if you're just to consider rather avoiding ice inside drinks, because although you may have made sure that the, you know, you're drinking bottled water or something, if you get ice, you can't be sure of where that comes from.
Mm.
Yeah.
So, and also if you want to make ice, then you really need to use boiled water or the chlorinated water, as you say.
Correct, yeah.
Okay, so yes, it's something that, you know, sometimes we can overlook because you don't think of it, and you just put in a, and it's very hot, so you may just tend to use ice without thinking.
Yeah. So in terms of the containment, mm-hmm. From outside at this stage, we don't think that it's a large outbreak. So just to not, you know, get into the habit of being like hugely concerned and thinking, oh, there's an outbreak, for people to please relax and understand that the healthcare practitioners are actually following up on every case. So the way we contain it medically is that if somebody does present with typhoid and has a positive typhoid blood result, firstly, it is a notifiable condition, so all healthcare practitioners are responsible for notifying the Department of Health. And then they actually go and do contact tracing. They follow up. They look at where the person's been, who their family members are, and they test those family members and review them regularly for any signs and symptoms.
Mm-hmm. Now, talking about signs and symptoms, what are the symptoms of typhoid fever?
Okay, so acute typhoid fever, we're talking about a systemic illness now. Just to say that probably the incubation period is around 10 to 14 days, but there's quite a big range of between 5 and about 21 days. Now, acute typhoid fever presents with a systemic illness, which basically is a fever, which is very common. And it's a stepwise fever, it becomes sustained, so it lasts more than 48 hours, in other words. And by fever, we're not just talking about feeling warm, we're talking about a temperature of more than 38.5 degrees Celsius. Mm-hmm. Patients also present with a headache. A lot of patients have gastrointestinal symptoms, so they have abdominal pain, cramps, nausea, vomiting, sometimes constipation. And, you know, who would think that it presented, but sometimes it does present with constipation and diarrhea, and of course diarrhea is more common in children. And interesting with typhoid, we often see that the person has a very slow pulse, so a bradycardia, in other words. And then the rose spots, which are classic, so that's a flat faint pink spot, which is small. It's 2 to 4 centimeters in diameter, and it's normally on the chest and the abdomen and the back. But they're quite difficult to see sometimes, and they're not, it's not, although it's one of the things that we do use to, you know, to confirm a clinical diagnosis, it's not always common. It can only be present in about 30% of people. The person also has hepatosplenomegaly, big liver and spleen, and other non-specific type symptoms like chills, fever, chills, diaphoresis, sweating, anorexia, cough, weakness, sore throat. They may even present with bleeding. That's quite a lot to take home to the members, but the key things that I would say there is fever, headaches, gastrointestinal, the rash, and then just to remember that this isn't something like a flu. This is a severe systemic illness.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what should be done if you think that you might have these symptoms?
Well, the first thing is to not panic. The next thing is to think about where you've been. We often see in sort of in presentations like this that suddenly everybody thinks they've got typhoid. So just remember the common things occur commonly, and we see diarrhea a lot more commonly than we do see typhoid. So first of all, don't panic. Then think about the history of where you've been. You need to have been in contact with somebody, or at least had a positive travel history, or at least been in one of the areas where there is suspected a typhoid case. That being said, you are going to have a heightened concern, and I would suggest that you mention that to your doctor when you do go to your doctor and just express your concern around it. So you should be seeking medical advice and certainly consulting with your GP. But when you do go to your GP, just to make sure that where you present there already, that you say that you are concerned, because we don't want everybody in the area to be contaminated either. So just to express your concern when you arrive there.
Okay. And what's the best way of preventing typhoid fever?
There's only two words, wash your hands. Most critical thing is meticulous attention to hand washing. And then, as I've mentioned, the washing of food, peeling fruit, making sure that you drink bottled or sterilized water, those are the most important ways of prevention.
Okay. The treatment, what kind of treatment do we have for a typhoid? And, of course, how successful is it?
Okay, so this is a bacteria, so there is treatment for typhoid, mm-hmm. and the treatment is, in fact, antibiotics. So the critical thing is to make sure that we identify it, diagnose it, and start treating the person early, because the earlier we treat it, the better the prognosis. So to get the patient to hospital, to start putting them on a drip, to make sure that they get adequate intravenous fluid, because these patients present and they're very dehydrated. So we do need to often put them on intravenous fluid and then, as I've mentioned, start them on the right antibiotic.
Okay. Now, with regard to success, how successful is it? Is this something that can come back again?
Just to say that the fatality, just to reassure everybody that we're not talking about sort of 50, we're not talking that high. We're talking at around 12 to 30%. So, yes, there is a high incidence of fatality, but just to reassure everybody that it can be treated successfully. Then the final thing is around chronicity and coming back. About 5% of patients, so between 1 and 5% of patients, may become chronic carriers after the acute phase of their illness.
Okay. Anyway, and lastly, what is the message that you would like to, well, for our listeners?
Firstly, don't panic. I think that the health department has got a lot of control over what's happening at the moment, so please don't panic. Mm-hmm. Secondly, if you are concerned, to raise those concerns and perhaps discuss them with your doctor. And then just remember the meticulous attention to hand washing and care with your food.
Mm-hmm. I think that's very, very important for everybody out here, not only because of the outbreak, but of course also to make sure that, you know, you get into this habit of doing it, you know, washing your hands, washing your food, washing your fruit. And like you said, even peeling it if necessary. Mm. But yeah, well, thank you very, very much, Dr. Holgate, for all that information. And we hope everything's under control even sooner.
My pleasure.
Okay, thank you so much for sharing all that information with us. And if anybody is perhaps, interested and would like to know more about typhoid, do you have any, is there any place where they can get more information from?
If you have access to the internet, obviously the CDC website mm-hmm. is probably one of the most important, places for the, CDC is obviously the Center for Disease Control, so for the sort of healthcare people, CDC website is very accurate in terms of an update of what's going on. Otherwise, please don't forget we have our very own National Institute for Communicable Diseases who are fantastic about keeping people up to date. So that's nicd.co.za.
nicd.co.za. Thank you so much for all that information. We certainly do appreciate it, and we hope to speak to you again in the future. Thank you so much.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. That was Dr. Wayne Holgate, who is the Chief Medical Officer for ER24, just giving us an update and just giving us more information with regards to typhoid. Apparently, there have been a few cases of typhoid in the Johannesburg area, and I believe also now in the Eastern Cape, just one or two in the Eastern Cape. But alhamdulillah, not to panic. There's really not much, you don't really have to be very concerned about it. But the important thing is for us to be aware of it and to be aware of what this disease is all about, inshallah. And remember, please wash your hands before you eat, after you eat, just as much as you possibly can. Your fruits, your vegetables, your foods, make sure everything that must be washed can be washed. So hygiene actually plays a very, very important role. Well, of course, and read your duas and all that. Anyway, just keep when you return, inshallah, we're going to be speaking to Sister Fatima Dawood, our community nursing sister, and it's our baby program. Alhamdulillah. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few moments. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back to our program. But before we do that, I just wanted to tell our listeners or remind our listeners what my engineer Usama reminded me a little while ago. I couldn't quite hear what he was telling me. But just a reminder that to wash our hands is also a sunnah. So it's something that we should, as Muslims, be aware of. Always washing our hands before and after we have a meal, when we go to the toilet, obviously, to come back, and also wash our hands. It's very important. Hygiene plays a very important role in a Muslim's life. So please remember, it is sunnah as well. So all these things are very important, inshallah, to us as Muslims too. Anyway, let's get back to our program, The Growing Child. Today we're focusing on behavior development, how to banish horrid habits. Now, how does your toddler press your buttons? Do any of these sound familiar? I'm going to share with you a few things. Just think about it. Throwing a screaming tantrum in the supermarket, or walking or running away from you, or interrupting you while you're on the phone or working at the computer, biting, hitting, kicking or grabbing, whining in general, whining to watch TV all the time, not listening to you or blatantly ignoring you, being defiant with your words or expressions, laughing at you if you're telling her off, arguing with you and yelling at you, taking her little brother's toys away from him just to be mean, refusing to greet you when you come home, picking her nose, being delightful to everyone except you, or perhaps refusing to eat the good food that you lovingly prepared, then asking for a chocolate instead. Is this familiar? Well, I'm sure there's many parents out there that, will be saying or will be familiar with these behaviors that children normally come up sometime in their life. And that's basically, I think, during the terrible twos. They call it the terrible twos, but it can be a little before that too. But the only good news is that, alhamdulillah, they do, by about 3 years or so, they start outgrowing those terrible behaviors. Bad toddler habits are normal, all part of their development, and they should grow out of them, alhamdulillah, in time. They say around about a year or so, a year, 2 years, that you have these tantrums where your children behave so horribly that you sometimes wonder, what have I brought into this world? Okay, yes, there are so many ways, inshallah, to make your life easier. Now, we're going to be discussing some of these habits, and with me in the studio is Sister Fatima Dawood. Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to our program once again. It's the first time this year, alhamdulillah. It's wonderful to have you with us again, Sister Fatima.
Wa alaikum salam. It's nice being back.
Okay.
After a year.
Well, I hope you had a wonderful hospital holiday and you rested out, alhamdulillah.
To that.
Okay, now we're going to be looking at some of these behaviors, and some of them that we're talking about is, I'm sure you're very familiar with them, biting. It's a very familiar one, biting. Or perhaps hitting and pinching. You get your little ones hitting and pinching others, even elders or even bigger people in the family. You know, the elder people in the adults, they even end up pinching and hitting adults. Then they whine a lot. Oh, I'm quite familiar with that. Sometimes you just wish, oh, please go away. Go away. Go back home when they do those things. Then, of course, their defiance and tantrums. Yes, tantrums. They really can do tantrums sometimes. And another one that not very common, but I think many children do this also, is when they hold their breath. And I think that's very scary. Sometimes parents really go into a panic when this happens. But sometimes this is just one of their little tactics, just to get the attention they want. So we're going to be talking about all of those today. And if we don't complete it, yes, certainly we'll continue with this in our next program. Okay, the first one we want to talk about, Sister Fatima, we've got you back on here. So let's see what you can tell us about this biting. You know, when does biting actually start?
Zinat, I think tantrum starts long before 2 years. Look, when a baby is born, how does it attract you? What does a baby do when somebody passes? As soon as they're born, you see their eyes moving. When they're born, they can't make sound yet. They can't focus on objects. But what they can do, they see vision and they can hear sound. And the first sound they can hear is that mother's voice. And if you think well, when does a child throw tantrums? It's always when the mother is present.
Definitely.
Never with
that
anybody
is,
else.
Yes.
Because they're used to that voice even in uterus. While they're in utero, they can hear that mother's voice and they can hear that mother's heartbeat. So that's familiar to them, very familiar. And when they are born, they want to hear that familiar voice. And they want to feel that familiar heartbeat as well. That's where breastfeeding comes in. Can you see how they follow each other? Eating follows each other. And because they are familiar with that sound, they want to hear it. And if they don't hear it, they make a sound that to attract the attention. And of course, when they are born, they cry.
That's a way of communicating. Of getting your attention.
The mother's attention. And did you notice when a baby cries and they hear the mother's voice, they stop crying? That's a familiar voice they want to hear. And that's a voice they want to listen. They're looking for.
So basically all these bad habits that children sometimes have, these horrid habits, the ones like we just mentioning, and we're going to go into a little in depth into that, the biting, the crying, the hitting, the pinching, all of that is just to attract the attention of the person that they want. And when they want it now and not later.
And I suppose we cause these habits to form, because what we said was, at the beginnings, what they do is they demand feed. So a mother knows as soon as a child whimpers or says, they demand feeding, they're hungry, or they lick their lips or they lick their little mouths, you know, they need their breastfeeding now. And as that goes, it progresses. If you follow the pattern of a child growing, it's very, very interesting. From the day they are born until they go to school. Because as they're growing up, they are improving in their ways of showing their emotions. And this is what we must follow. And sometimes when you do that, you cause a lot of ease when the patient is growing, as the baby is growing, the child, because you'll understand this child, what is causing him to do these funny things, you know, the screaming, the crying, whatever you mentioned here, the whining, the biting, the kicking, all that. It's all part of growing up.
And amazingly, like you mentioned, and now we can understand why, is that the mother plays a very important role for the child. And amazingly, it is mostly the mother that can comfort the child and, you know, kind of discipline the child as well.
Because you they've grown yeah. to know this person. This is the person they know. This is a person that they got used to. And for 9 months, while they were growing up, this person was there to guide them along. And they expect this to happen. When they cry or when they whimper, they expect the mother to come and comfort them. Because she knows that, she must know that they are there. The attention seeking is always present as far as children are concerned. And we learn that as parents, as mothers, as fathers, we learn that the children do, they've got habits that they form to attract attention. And if you don't heed to that, these little things that they're doing, then it actually worsens. So this will end up with the biting and the pinching and that. We can prevent that.
Mm-hmm. So that's what we actually want to talk to you about now. Yeah. You know, okay, we understand where it comes from. But now when a child starts biting, when does this biting normally start? And, you know, what do we do to stop the child from doing that? Because the thing is, you know, biting is one thing, but they're going to hurt another child, they're going to hurt somebody else. You know, they're going to do something that we need to stop them. But how do we do that?
But see, that when does biting start?
That's what I want to know.
It actually starts with breastfeeding.
Okay.
You notice that it actually starts with breastfeeding. When the child is breastfeeding, they expect the mother to pay attention there. The mother was, we say when you, that's a time where you bond with your child. You look at your child, you talk to your baby while they're breastfeeding, they like it. But if you don't do that and you are distracted from them, what do? They actually bite. Then you wonder about why is this child biting? It's attention seeking. From that age already.
And of course, also because sometimes they cannot communicate with you. So the only way is, okay, if I'm crying, she's not listening. But if I do, you know,
if I
it's
do
amazing. So. Actually, it's true what you said. It's amazing how children's brains function. Because all the time they are learning.
Learning, it's
and
a
they,
learning process.
And they pick up these little things. We don't understand how it happens, but they actually do it. This is
and
the way.
Okay. And you notice in it when people, when children come there, and they make people they act differently from the normal. A child bites. It's not because it wants to bite. It's attention seeking. It bites the mother's nipple because it wants attention. Speak to me. I'm here. I'm growing up. I understand what you say. When you smile at me, I do understand you're happy. If you moan, means that you are unhappy with me. Am I making you unhappy while breastfeeding? So you talk to your baby and you communicate to them, and they're very happy. A happy baby never bites. Did you notice that?
Yes, and it's amazing how they pick up these habits. You know? It's if they bite you and there's a reaction, that's when they know. Okay, when I bite, she's jumping, she's screaming, or she's. You know, there's something happening.
She's paying attention.
She's paying attention. So, you know, it's also up to you as a mother to be able to not overreact every time something like this happens. So, in a way, you confuse the child. Okay, she's not reacting if I'm doing this. So maybe this is not a very good idea. I'm going to look for something else to do now. But if the minute you react, the minute you scream at the child or you, you know, amazingly, some mothers, you know, just instinctively would even give the baby a little smack. And then they know, okay, this is really working. So let's try it the next time too.
And if you notice it, you must notice it very well. When you don't pay attention to the baby, while you're breastfeeding, I'm talking breastfeeding now, and you pay attention to the child and you, when she bites, you react to it. The baby sucks very fast then. Because now she knows she's got what she wants. Or what the baby wants, because now the mother has now paying attention to me, and she now knows that I am here, It's not that somebody's just sucking or feeding a thing. You're not feeding a thing, you're feeding your baby. So talk to your baby. They want attention. And that's the first attention that a baby seeks. And this is where you start off paying attention to your children.
Okay. So now, as your child grows up, maybe they're about 1-2 years old, that's when they start socializing with other children too. Maybe a sibling comes along in the process, and they use this then, you know, where they actually would bite the little ones. They would bite their little siblings. They would bite anybody. And it becomes quite embarrassing sometimes, you know, when somebody else's children come home and they actually bite those children, and they really do hurt, and maybe, you know, hurt them. So how do you get this child out of this? Now I'm talking about the bigger child. How do you get them out of this habit of biting? What is it as a parent? We know obviously it's attention seeking, but now how do you get them to stop?
What we do is, you know, it's attention seeking. When you don't pay attention to your baby while breastfeeding, it's going to bite you. Mm. And as soon as you pay attention to the baby is very happy, and you talk to them, very happy. You continue with that. Children need attention. Children need to be spoken to. Children need to be taught discipline. Children need to know that there is somebody there that loves them, that wants to be good children. But the person that is doing that is either one or two parents, but it is attention seeking. There's nothing else but attention seeking. If you do not do for them what they want you to do, they grow up in this way where they do things like this to attract attention. If there's visitors coming in and your child is used to it, so you talk to your child from the time they are born. We speak to our children. We give them little toys. The rattle is the first thing. Why rattle? Because it makes a noise. It's a colorful thing, so the child gets used to it. And your toys must, you improve your toys, the types of toys as the child grows. And in that time, you're teaching your child to share. You take it away from the child because the baby, and the first word we say is ta. Ta means give. And to them, they understand time is give. So we do that to our children. As they're growing up, you as a mother, you teach them to give and to take. And when there is a friend coming in or visitors coming to the child is used to doing that. So when you say ta to them, they give. But if you're going to grab it away from them, what do? The reaction is to hurt or to attract attention. How do they attract attention? By calling your name, you're not going to take notice of it. By pulling you, you're not going to take those. But if they bite, it's pain. So it's going to attract attention. And to them, this is a way of attention seeking.
Mm-hmm. But it's also very, very important for the mother to make them understand that what you are doing is not right. That is not a good thing to do. You know, you can't be hurting anybody for that matter. So how do we get them to understand this? Do you... if it happens, you take them away from the situation and you explain to them. You try and explain to them that what you are doing is wrong. And do we in some way or the other punish them?
You know, I don't think you can punish a child because they don't understand. You take a thing away from them and they cry and you don't do anything about it. So the child doesn't understand what he's crying for. But they know that if they do something and the opposite person cries, there's a reaction. So what they want is reaction. So we must teach them to share. You teach children to share things, especially where siblings are concerned.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you are saying, but then many a times you find the child, no matter how hard you try to teach them to share, and I think this normally happens with your first child. You know, we unfortunately give them so much. And then some children, alhamdulillah, you will see them sharing. They would always want to give another child. But you do find some children that just refuse to share their toys. And if anybody takes it from them, that's it. You know, they're going to try and hurt that person. And we're talking here little ones. We're talking about 1 year, 2 year old little ones where they would actually do something. And in this case, we're talking biting, where the child would actually bite another child just so that, you know, I can get my way. And you just hear the screaming going on. So what would you say is the best thing is to get them away from that situation and then explain to them?
But what is, have you noticed the extended families? With an extended family situation where the younger brother gets married, brings his wife in, then the second brother comes in, the third. In the extended families in those days, children used to share. Remember, they used to grow up like my brother, my sister. They didn't know each other as cousins. They knew each other as brothers and sisters. So they were used to sharing. They grew up together where there was something to share. What the mother would do, she'd take a banana or an apple, cut it into pieces and share it amongst them. So they saw this. They learnt it in the time they were growing up. But today it's nuclear families. With nuclear families it's difficult. The first thing is the mother may not be there to teach the child because the mother's gone to work, father's gone to work. The child is brought up with a helper. The helper hasn't got time to teach the child. So when they get on Saturday, Sundays, when families get together, these children are not used to sharing. And this is the end product of not learning to share. Because this is mine. I'm used to having it all the time. Why must I give it to somebody else? And if I give it, they're going to take it away. So it's this way of growing up that we are actually teaching our children.
Mm-hmm. I think this is one of the reasons that when you have little ones, you should take them out a lot and mix with the family. You know, cousins playing together is such a nice experience, and them growing up together. So you should never keep your children away from playing with other children. Try and invite children to your home. And I mean, try and invite. You have brothers, you have sisters. Invite their little ones to join in, you know. It's for your own good and for the good of that little child. Because keeping them away, sometimes, unfortunately, you know, parents are just with their own children. They'll take them their own children around here, there. And if it's one child, it's even sometimes, unfortunately, even worse. So the thing is to try and get all your children together always. Take them out. Let them mix with other children. It makes such a huge difference.
Makes it very big. If you must notice it, Zinat, is when, even you're alone, you're working, your husband's working, the child's been cared for by a caretaker. Everything we see in the shops, what we do is we buy for our child because we can afford it at that time we're working. So you see little things and you buy it. And this child gets used to having all the little toys, the little clothing, the beautiful clothes, everything. But the child is alone. The child does not know how to share. The child, to her or to him, it's his. And when anybody else comes in and tries to, even to play with something or to just to touch a toy or touch his clothes, they react because they are not used to sharing. One thing we have to do is to teach our children to socialize.
And I think
because we do socialize right into old age.
Well, unfortunately, we've come to the end of the program already, but inshallah, continue with this program and talk more about it in our next baby program, inshallah. That would be in another month's time.
Inshallah.
It's time for the news now, and we have to sign off now. But jazakallah khair for listening, and if our listeners have any other ideas or would like to know more about, you know, if you have any problems with your baby, please do feel free to contact Sister Fatima Dawood on the number 011-852-6515. She would be able to give you whatever advice or whatever advice you would possibly want for your child, inshallah. Well, that's it then from us. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.